Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. And as you know, we try to bring you stories and information on how to connect faith to life. So do you ever wonder if the promises that you know to be true about God and who He is would register or kick in your consciousness when you are faced with a crisis or a tragedy? Do you know how you'd respond when the unexpected happens? Well, today we get to hear about faith in action, the story of how someone has actually taken God's promises, like the promise of His presence in time of trouble or His strength during intense suffering, and applied those principles to his life. In fact, our guest for today found himself in a situation where the application was really not an option, but that application of God's word became a necessity. I hope that the story you hear today will encourage you as much as it has encouraged me and my family. Let me introduce you to two of my guests for today. Kent Sievers is a 26-year-old from Lincoln, Nebraska. He was out enjoying a day on the lake with his buddies this past Memorial Day when he fell from a boat that they were on and was hit by the motor of that same boat. Thankfully, he was rescued from the lake and transported to a nearby hospital. Having lost a lot of his body's blood and wrought with several severe injuries, he endured several hours of surgery that thankfully saved both his life and his limbs. You may recognize his last name, Sievers, from our frequent guest, Dr. Boyd Sievers, one of our Ask the Professor experts, and he is Kent's uncle. Kent's a man of great faith. He's here today to tell his story, as well as his mother, Lori Sievers, who's been on this journey with him, and she can tell the story from her perspective as well. Welcome, Lori and Kent.
Thank you.
Well, tell me about that day, the day of the accident, Kent. What exactly happened?
Well, it's like you said, I was sitting on the boat. We had a wakeboarder behind us, a good old friend from my hometown, and childhood friends. And there were six of us on the boat. Two of us moved up to the front of the boat just to kind of get some more power to the engine. So we were sitting on the side of the boat, and what happened is the driver turned a little more sharply than I expected, and I ended up in the water. And then the boat continued to move over on top of me and ended up hitting both my arms and my chest, and actually there's a little cut on my just above my throat on my chin. So, hit pretty hard. The worst injuries are to the left hand or the left arm, I should say. It went through all three bones in my left arm. And,
Did you know right away something had happened, and could you see the injuries?
Right away, I just kind of felt a violent shaking. I was underwater still, and I came up out of the water, and at that point, it still really didn't even hurt. And so I came up out of the water, and kind of my brain was starting to put together what had happened. I pulled my right hand then out of the water and saw what the damage that the propeller had done, and realized then that my left arm, I could just feel the warmth of the blood in the water on my left side, and started, you know, registering the pain. It was very extreme pain. And at that point, I realized, started yelling back to the guys in the boat to turn around and come get me. Then I also saw another boat that was nearby and started just kind of hollering at them, asking them to come and help. And so then they came and helped. And that was that was very important to my story as well. Two of the girls on that boat were emergency room nurses at a nearby hospital, and they jumped out of their boat, crawled in our boat, and started doing some first aid, just kind of emergency treatment, getting me tourniquet, towel tourniquets, that kind of thing, putting pressure on my wounds, and, you know, having someone else in their boat call for an air ambulance, just remained very calm throughout the whole ordeal, and ended up, I mean, they saved my life. So that was very important.
And I've read that when people go through tragic situations and come to a crisis, that they often are thinking about not only what happened, but they start thinking about people whom they love, or they start thinking about God and asking him to help. Did that happen for you?
I would say initially, I guess kind of to go back, I don't know. I didn't think about dying that much. Mm-hmm. I thought I was for a split second, I thought, you know, this could be it. My injuries were pretty severe, and if I didn't make it back to the boat, you know, I would be in a lot of trouble. I don't know. I didn't. I was very present. I'm a very present person. So in that moment, I definitely, you know, sent out a prayer, but just kind of was really focused on, you know, treading water. I did tread water for almost a minute before they could get the boat over to me. And so at that point, just kind of very, very present. And then after that, just kind of, yeah, I guess, trying to remain calm and cool. And yeah, I definitely thought about what this would mean if I would make it through alive. And yeah, I knew that I could meet my maker that day, I guess. It was kind of a present thought, but yeah, I don't know. The fear wasn't there. I guess part of my story is that my first grandparent just passed away recently, and the calm and just the comfort that I got from knowing that he was a man of faith and that he would be meeting Jesus. I mean, that was a very almost unexpectedly calming presence for me to know that. And so kind of at that point, just kind of realizing, you know, I could be up with Grandpa, and also just kind of realizing, I don't know, that's a present reality that, you know, we all must face someday. And yeah, for me, it was something that took a lot of the fear out of it. So yes, that was present, a present awareness for me, but it was, I had about 40 minutes before I ended up in the operating room, and most of that time was just kind of spent just trying to maintain my composure. But I do recall that. I also recall thinking, man, if this had been 50 years ago, you know, what would it have been like? Like, I know the other promise that I had was that I was going to receive treatment and eventually either get some kind of pain medication or be put under so that I could do surgery. So at some point my struggle would be over. And so, you know, and obviously it just began, but I mean, the pain was so extreme. It's kind of hard to think about anything else at that time. So
So, Lori, once Kent made it to the hospital and he was getting ready for surgery, is that when you heard about this, and how did that transpire?
Well, actually, one of his friends who was on the boat called us almost immediately once they had gotten him back to the shore. And I don't know if he was actually being transported, but she called right away and said that there's been an accident. She just said his arm was hurt is all she told us. We had just gotten back from a little weekend outing. It was Memorial Day, and actually our 35th wedding anniversary that day. And so we were just kind of at home resting, had only been home about an hour when she called. And we live about 2 hours from Lincoln. So we just kind of grabbed our suitcases that had were still packed and started off for the hospital. So we got to Lincoln when he'd been in surgery for probably an hour and a half or 2 hours.
And what was your reaction right away when you got to the hospital and found out the extent of the injuries?
Well, thankfully, I guess on the way, we really didn't know what the extent of the injuries were. The doctors would take turns. There were four different surgeons operating on him at different times. The first surgeon that came out and talked to us was the trauma surgeon, and he kind of laid out for us the extent of the injuries. And yeah, it was pretty sobering to hear actually all that happened and what that entailed. You know, I think in the beginning, you're really kind of in a protective bubble and you can hear all of those things, but reality doesn't really set in. I think when it really hit me for the first time was actually a week after the accident, and I saw the bandages come off his arms for the first time and saw the extent of the injuries, that it just really hit me. Oh my word, God, you protected him so much. As he said, the cut on his right hand goes completely from the palm side of his wrist clear around. So I realized how easy it would have been for him to have lost his hand. There's another cut across the palm of his hand. He could have lost all four of those fingers. And then his left arm, as he said, was cut completely directly across the elbow. And there was only about an inch wide strip of skin that was still attached in his left arm, which the brachial artery was still intact, or he probably would have bled to death or lost that arm. So it was really that, seeing those bandages come off a week later, that it really hit me of how much God had protected him.
Well, we're going to hear more about Kent and Lori's story as well, and we have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. We are talking with Kent Sievers. Kent is a 26-year-old who found himself in a boating accident over Memorial Day weekend and has been undergoing several surgeries and lots of physical therapy to repair the damage that was done. Also talking to Lori Sievers, his mother, who's been with him along the way. And Lori, we were just talking about how you realized how God had really protected him as he went through this accident. And even as I look at the pictures, I see the cuts along his chest and his chin and how those could have been devastating as well. Ken, did you feel that way as well as they began to remove the bandages and you saw what was going on to just realize the provision that God had given you?
Yes, definitely. I mean, every new thing that I learn about it is pretty incredible to me. Of course, I had to endure the pain, so I expected, you know, I expected my arm to be gone, actually. I had to ask if it was still there when we were on the boat. But, yeah, absolutely. It was overwhelming, you know, and even to see the x-rays. They took x-rays at the time, but to see x-rays almost probably a month later and just see, you know, they told us, you know, how many breaks were in each arm, but it really didn't do it justice, I don't think, because it, I mean, it really, there were places where the bone was just completely splintered. And so, yeah, I guess just seeing God's provision and getting, you know, having people to take care of me directly on the scene. My friends, definitely huge part of that. These nurses that were on the boat and then, you know, the hospital care I received afterwards, definitely have a lot to be thankful for.
Yes. When your uncle was telling me about the nurses who just happened to be nearby, two emergency room nurses, I just had to be astounded at the fact that they were there and able to help and willing to help. That's just an amazing part of your story. He also told me that you wanted to talk when you became conscious. You wanted to say something. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I guess I will say the emergency room nurses being in the boat was just the beginning of the blessing that I saw in my life as a result of the accident. I mean, immediately, that was obviously huge. A big part of my life is, I love to be around people. I'm a very social person. I'm an extrovert. I get my energy from other people. And so, that's a huge part of my life. So then, when I woke up after the surgery, I was very groggy and kind of partially lucid. And so the first thing that I remember wanting to do was talk. Well, I was intubated. So obviously I couldn't use my voice to talk. So I kind of started flailing my feet around because my feet still worked fine. And just kind of spelled out some words in the air, one of which was pen. And so, yeah, my friend Amy was there, dear friend. And she realized that I was spelling pen. And so went and got me a pen. And so she put it in between my toes so I could write on a piece of paper. And I just wrote, "I just want to talk," just because that was something that is a big need in my life. And after waking up, not really knowing what happened, I just really needed some human interaction. So
as you're trying to get better and as you're going through therapy and like we were chatted a little bit before the show, that it's sometimes difficult to be patient with yourself and with your healing. Is it difficult to recall during those times that God is good in a situation like this, or is it easy? Does it make it easier? Where does your mind kind of go when it's feeling difficult and painful?
No, I would say it's difficult to understand or try to, I guess, kind of synthesize an idea of what meaning God could be assigning to my life. So that's kind of a frustration. But for me, I mean, there was nothing in my experience. I had an incredibly, I shouldn't say incredibly unique, but an experience that is unique in many ways. I mean, I never had a moment where there wasn't someone there in my life, someone that was there helping me or you know, trying to raise money for me. One of my friends that I haven't seen for a while moved away, started a foundation for me, and some of my other friends kind of took that over to bring it just kind of closer to home. But I never struggled to understand that God is good. The problem for me was trying to understand where this is going. Mm. I mean, I believe that God has a plan for my life, but I don't know what that is. Mm. And so for me to try and understand where this is going is very frustrating, and it's very hard to understand why I would lose, you know, mobility and just ability to function in the prime of my life, you know, before, you know, I can get married and have a family. And so, yeah, it's very difficult to understand, but at the same time, it was overwhelming how much support I had, and just constantly had people praying for me, had people, like I said, raising money, doing fundraiser kind of things for me, coming to visit. So, yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. And Lori, how has your experience been in this whole recovery process as well? You've been able to spend a lot of time, obviously, with Kent. And what has been your experience in how you are there scriptures that have been helpful in how to help heal?
Well, I guess the overwhelming thing has been, and I've known this before, but when you experience it firsthand, it is very humbling. The most important thing through all of this, as Kent alluded to, is the community that he has around him and that we have as well. I honestly don't know how people would go through an experience like this without the community of believers and people coming around to just encourage, to serve, to just pour out love over and over again. That's probably been the main thing. I don't know specific scriptures that come to mind right now. A quote that I read sometime in the past that I was just thinking about again today is, anxiety is picturing the future without God in it. And I know that just had such a profound effect on me of realizing that God is never away from us for one second. His hand was upon Kent through this whole thing. His hand has been upon us through this, and his hand will continue to be upon us, and God will continue to be with Kent every second of every day into the future, even when we don't know what the future looks like.
Well, Lori and Kent, we just thank you so much for being willing to share your story and share the vulnerability that everyone feels for their future. You put it so eloquently into words that when tragedy strikes, we don't know the future, but that we know that God's in control. We thank you so much for sharing that story and just exemplifying what it means to live a life of faith. So thanks so much for joining us today.
You're
Absolutely.
Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. one of the joys of doing this program each week is having the opportunity to tell the stories of those who are finding ways to live out their faith in their daily lives. And all of you would agree that one person who's taken a tragic circumstance and allowed God to do mighty things through her is our friend Johnny Erickson Tada. You all know her as the founder and CEO of Johnny and Friends, an organization that provides Christian outreach in the disability community and equips both families and churches with support and spiritual help. Johnny's the author of numerous best-selling books. Her most recent is written with her husband, Ken Tada. They have been married for over 30 years. Ken Tada recently retired from 32 years of teaching and is currently the director of ministry and development for Johnny and Friends. Ken is also an avid fly fisherman. I loved reading about that in your book. And he helps lead Wild Adventures, a fishing ministry. Welcome, Johnny and Ken. Great to have you here.
Good to be with you.
Good to be with you.
Well, thank you. So was a book about your marriage something that you had thought about or planned or even talked about, or was it a recent decision? How did you come to that?
Well, I think, Joey, it was just one of those things that was a mutual understanding that we would not have been able to rewrite this book 32 years ago, early in our marriage. But, you know, over the years, we've discovered some things that we thought perhaps could help other couples. With or without a disability.
And basically we decided that when we crested 30 years of marriage a couple of years ago, after 30 years, we decided, you know what? We have been through some tough challenges. God's faithfulness has seen us through times of discouragement, depression, cancer, chronic pain like quadriplegia. And actually we decided when we, celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary, we decided it might be a good time to write all this down and encourage other couples. And so thank you for telling our listening friends about this new book.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's called Johnny and Ken, An Untold Love Story. And you do kind of begin to wonder when couples say they've been married for 30 years or 40 years or 50 years or even 25 years at this point in time, what is it that they have that has allowed them to get through what they've gotten through? And knowing that your marriage already started out with some challenges, how did you make it to 30 years?
Well, it was not easy in the beginning. I don't think either Ken or I, back in 1982, I don't think we realized what we were getting ourselves into. You know, I'm a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. I have no use of my hands or my legs. And yet Ken fell in love with me and I fell in love with him. And of course, we both loved our Savior. And so we entered marriage with a lot of questions. And real quickly, we found out, oh my goodness, this is hard.
Well, the other thing too, Joe, is when people ask that question in the beginning, you know, what did you see in Johnny that attracted you to her? You know, obviously she had a disability. So my answer to them, it's a very simple one. In the Old Testament, in 1 Samuel 16:7, it says that God looks at the outward appearance. Man looks at the outward appearance, excuse me. God looks at the heart. And I saw in Johnny a beautiful heart. And so that's what I fell in love with the first. I think that her love for Jesus has sustained us over all these years. As Johnny mentioned, you know, our marriage is like any other marriage. The only difference is that we happen to have a disability involved.
Well, Johnny, I love that story that you tell of how Ken might have known of you because of your public persona before you knew who he was, but that you were actually praying for him before you'd even met him. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that story? I thought that was adorable.
Well, and some of our listeners may have heard this story, but I was in my early 30s. I was still single. I was pretty much enjoying my single life. I was sitting in church one morning, a big church, one of those mega churches here in Southern California, and our pastor was away, and so we had a visiting preacher, and I'm sitting there in church, and I'm just kind of bored with the sermon. It's just not grabbing me, and yet here it was Sunday. It was the Lord's Day, the Sabbath. I did not want to just waste my time thinking about what I was going to have for lunch or the work that was awaiting me on my desk Monday morning. I decided I would do something that would honor God. And I started praying, I felt immediately led to pray for the man, this man that was sitting about five pews in front of me. I did not see his face. I did not know his name. I did not know who he was. Didn't even know if he had a wedding ring on his finger. But I just felt strangely compelled to pray for this man. And pray I did. I prayed all kinds of things, that God would strengthen his friendships, that God might resolve any conflicts there might be at work or with his family, that God might rescue him out of sin, that God might keep him morally pure. On and on I went praying for this man. And by the time they pronounced the benediction, I almost wheeled up to this man, Ken Tata, to introduce myself. And I decided, nah, I better not do that. It'll look pushy. But when we were introduced to mutual friends about a month or so later, and when I met Ken Tata, I looked at him, and the first thing I said was, turn around and let me see the back of your head. And I couldn't believe it was him. I said, I know you. I prayed for you about a month or so ago in church. And that kind of sparked an interesting conversation.
Yeah, as you can imagine, Joe, I've never had anybody pray for the back of my head before or since. And so when Johnny said that, it was a little bit of humor, a little laughter there.
You never know. Maybe there's some single women listening, and they should try that out. Who knows?
Well, I had gained enough courage that evening when we were introduced to ask Johnny out for a date. I had never dated anybody in a wheelchair before. But knew enough anyway that unless we were going to take somebody along with us on our first date, I was going to have to transfer her in and out of the wheelchair and into my car. And I wanted to do that by myself, not with another person. So at the time, I was coaching football, and at the high school I taught at, they had a great weight room. So the kids on the team couldn't understand why I was working out so hard that week, because I had determined I was going to be able to curl 180 pounds just in case, you know,
just in case I was too heavy.
Yeah, I didn't want to make it sound like Johnny's 180 pounds. I just thought I'd be safe with 180 pounds.
No, and when he lifted me, he went, hi-ya! And I thought I was on a date with Bruce Lee. It was so strange. It was so funny. Our life together started out around Christ and a good friendship. And as Ken shared a moment ago from 1 Samuel 16:7, I could tell he was falling in love with my heart. And I fell in love with him too. And when he asked me to marry him, I prayed about it and I said, Lord, there's so many questions. How is this going to work? I don't foresee how it can happen. So we went into marriage with a lot of questions as to how all this was going to pan out. And here we are 32 years later, talking to you, Joe, and saying, you know what? It can be done. Yes, it was rough. Yes, it was difficult. At times, terribly depressing. Other times, we knocked heads so, you know, violently. But here we are today, thanking the Lord and praising him for his grace that saw us through.
I think the early portion of our marriage, you know, we were really kind of like any other newlywed couple, excited about marriage. But then as the reality set in, and after that first year, there was a time when I sat on that bed and just mentioned to Johnny how tired I was. And you know, it was just a difficult, you know, the routine and all the other things. But I really believe that the sustaining force, not only in our marriage, but every marriage, is Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And boy, you know, without Jesus, it would have made things much, much more difficult.
Johnny, I was reading how you were worried about how Ken would be able to sustain this caring for you, or really understanding what it is that you go through on a daily basis. And, you know, we read your books, we hear your devotionals, we hear you speak, and I don't think a lot of us would understand what you really go through on a daily basis, because we only see you at your best. So what was it like to...
And to be sure, even in the beginning, Ken and I had friends to help. My girlfriends would come in the morning and assist with my bed bath, toileting routines, exercising my legs and arms, getting me dressed, putting me in the wheelchair, pushing me to the bathroom. brushing my teeth, brushing my hair, blowing my nose, just all the day-to-day routines. And once in a while, those routines also had to fall on Ken. And I felt badly about that, but that's just part of the reality. I need help. And I'll never forget that time when Ken did sit on the edge of the bed, as he just shared, and sighed and confessed to me, "Johnny, I feel trapped. I am worn out. I can't do this." Back then, I spat out at him, "Well, where was your head when we got married? Didn't you know it was going to be this difficult? Didn't you realize it was going to be this hard?" But as soon as I said those words, I felt awful. I felt guilty. And I said, "Ken, I am so sorry. I did not mean to say that. That's not me. That's not like me at all." But Joe, after thinking about it a little bit, I realized, you know what? That is like me. That's just like me. And so quadriplegia in marriage has been God's way of squeezing the lemon in our lives, revealing any selfishness or spitefulness or bitterness or resentment that needs to be brought to the surface and confessed. And so in a way, we thank God for the quadriplegia because it has shown both Ken and me the worst of us and also the best of us. And when the worst comes out, when we are controlled by self-pity or resentments or selfishness, those are the things we want to quickly bring before God and say, "Lord Jesus, change us. Uproot this bitterness. Get rid of this selfishness. And help me to look out for my spouse's best interest." And that's a discipline that we've been practicing for years in our marriage, to the point now where we can see the quadriplegia not as a liability, but as an asset.
We're talking today with Ken and Johnny Erickson Tada. They've written a book called Johnny and Ken, An Untold Love Story. And we will be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Today I have the privilege of interviewing Ken and Johnny Erickson Tada, talking about their new book, Johnny and Ken, An Untold Love Story. And we've been talking about just the frustrations that may occur in any marriage, really. It's compounded, of course, with yours because maybe because of the disability and the constant care. But you've had a run-in with several other things as well, including cancer. So how did that hit you? As you knew that you were diagnosed with cancer, how did you deal with that with yet one more thing, Johnny or Ken, either?
Well, I'd like to answer that, Joe. It was interesting. All of us, if we get old enough, are going to have some type of catastrophic diagnosis, either spouse. But in this case, it was Johnny. And the one thing that happened when Johnny was diagnosed with cancer is I realized for the first time I may lose my best friend. Mm. It hit me that this side of eternity is very short. Mm. So what it did do for us, if I could say, there was a blessing out of this cancer. It just drew us closer together. Not that there was any problem before, but it was really a gift. We didn't know how bad this cancer was going to be. We didn't know if this cancer was going to mean that Johnny's life was going to be shortened. But at this point, we know that after the fact that Johnny is 4 years out from the cancer. But during this journey of cancer, we've learned that the simplest of things can be the most precious. Just sitting in the backyard, having a conversation, enjoying the birds and the wind and the trees. And I guess I always knew this about Johnny, But the one thing that I gained was a huge respect for my wife. She is every bit the warrior on the inside as she is on the outside. After 40 some odd years of marriage, you know, and of being in a wheelchair, 40 some years of being in a wheelchair, cancer was just one more thing. And I had some conversations with God. I said, God, why Johnny? Why after all this time, why with the spinal cord injury would you now allow her to have this cancer? And then it came to me, why not Johnny? Mm. Because she's such a fighter. She's such a great communicator. She's able now to speak to a different issue in terms of this cancer. And there's not anybody, if we went to a spiritual battle tomorrow, that I would want in my foxhole more than my wife, because I know she'd have my back.
Mm. Well, and it is true that when you're speaking about personal experiences, you've just opened up a whole nother arena of experiences that someone has had with cancer. And now you're able to speak to that community as well, and the power of God's love and mercy within that battle. So is it easy then to look at this latest blow as being a gift from God? And how can you encourage couples who may be in their own form of whatever ailment that they're having to really turn to Jesus?
Well, we're told in the book of James chapter 1, verse 12, that we should persevere. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, for he shall obtain the crown of life that never perishes. That's an incredible goal to look forward to, especially in light of what Ken just shared a moment ago. Our lives are but wisps of smoke and fading vapor. We are here today and gone tomorrow. Oh my goodness, just today, within 24 hours, my husband and I have learned of three good friends who have passed away from cancer. So there are no guarantees in this life. So look at each hardship as designed by God to test your faith, to draw you closer to Him, to cause you to lean harder on Him, to help you gain empathy toward others who hurt, and make that your goal in life. And that's the way we chose to look at cancer. We followed what Dr. John Piper had said about his own cancer. Don't waste it. Now, don't waste your sufferings. Don't waste your sorrows. And certainly do not pity yourself in the midst of them. But look at them the way God looks at them. You know, I remember one time after chemotherapy, Ken was driving me home, and he was in the driver's seat. Obviously, I was in my wheelchair in the back, tied down, and in my wheelchair, and we were having a conversation through the rearview mirror, and we started talking about how suffering is like little splashovers of hell, kind of waking you up out of your spiritual slumber and getting you seriously thinking about the ultimate hell from which Christ has rescued you. And so then we started talking about, well, what are splashovers of heaven? Are they those easy, breezy, bright days where there are no problems, when you're feeling great? And we decided, no, a splashover of heaven is finding Jesus in your splashover of hell. Mm-hmm. There's nothing sweeter, there's nothing more heavenly than finding Jesus in the midst of your hellish circumstances. So, yes, cancer is hard. Yes, chronic pain is hard. Yes, quadriplegia is hard. But these things happen, it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 9. That we might not rely on ourselves, but on God. And you can find no better person to lean on than your God, who is your very present help in time of trouble.
You write about just a bit of a story about listening to God and being able to spend time with Him, and how when you asked, He said, I think you should spend a little time watching the hummingbirds today. So why is it important for couples, even though they spend a lot of time together, to spend that time apart for spiritual refreshment, for time alone, for time to listen, even if they don't feel like there may be any issues in their marriage?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head when you described it as a, quote, time to listen. It, our world is so full of chatter and noise. It is so full of constant visual images. We're being bombarded constantly by visual images, by noise, by the media. And husband and wives may think they are communicating with each other, but sometimes it just requires that we sit by ourselves and be quiet with each other, sit outside in the backyard, enjoy the little things of life. As Ken said, the birds by the bird feeder, the wind in the trees, the color of the flowers, the bushes bobbing in the wind, just all kinds of small things that help you to listen, not only to what God may be telling you through that intimate experience, but just listen to each other, look into each other's hearts, and you need quiet time to do that. You need time alone away from all the chatter and noise of this world. It's a good discipline for any couple.
You know, I think that it's a discipline, as Johnny just mentioned, and with a discipline, it takes practice. And I think as Johnny also mentioned, it's time alone, even alone from your spouse, to be able to hear God's voice. Now, I've never heard an audible voice, but I know that God has spoken to my heart. And one of the things that he was saying during the early portion of Johnny's journey in cancer was, be not afraid. It was very, very clear. And if I could just share one story, it was the weekend right after Johnny's surgery. Her surgery was on a Monday. It was a Saturday night, and we were having a couple friends over on Sunday. And so we had one of those days where we sat in the backyard and just talked. And at the end of it, it was a beautiful, actually, it was July 3rd, our anniversary. And I told Johnny, I said, Johnny, I'm just going to go out and get our cushions for our patio furniture so I didn't have to worry about it the next day. And that's what I did. I had to go out in the garage, pull the car back in order to get to the cushions. But as I started the car, it was about 8 o'clock at night. I hear Johnny's voice on the radio. And I'm going, wait a minute, I don't have the Johnny CD. What? And then I realized it was the radio program with Johnny's devotional. And so I started to think, well, maybe I should go in and let Johnny know that she's on the radio. And I realized it's a short radio program and I might miss it. Mm. So I pulled the car out of the garage, sat there and listened to Johnny speak. And, it was a program, a devotional about praying for our caregivers. And she specifically was talking about praying for her mom, who had helped her early on, when she first broke her neck, and that we need to be praying for those caregivers. Now, what are the odds, Joe, of getting in a car at 8 o'clock at night, which I would not have ever done and don't normally do, pulling out of the garage and hearing your wife's voice on the radio and speaking about caregiving at a time when we were just starting this journey of cancer? Because at that point, we didn't know how bad this cancer was. We hadn't had the lab reports or anything like that. So this was all new to us. And we're looking at it with hindsight now. But at that point, it was all new.
When Ken came into the house out of the garage and told me what he had just experienced, me talking about caregiving on the radio, of all things, I said, oh, Ken, God cares so much about you. You are the focus of his individualized attention and love. Oh, my goodness. It was quite a special serendipitous moment.
Mm. Well, we are just so grateful that we get to read your stories and that we get to think about both sides of a marriage, the caregiver, the one receiving the care, and how those switch from time to time. After you had been here at the university, I had a great conversation with my students, and we just talked about that. What does it mean to have true sacrificial love in a marriage? And you, both of you, have just been exemplary of showing us what that really means. So from the bottom of our heart, we thank you, and thank you for writing this book.
Well, God bless you, Joe, and thanks so much for sharing our story with your listening friends.
Yes, God bless you, Joe. Thank you so much for the privilege of being able to share the day.
Absolutely.